Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host. Gee, thanks so much for being with us today. So, crazy week, huh? Glad the weekend's here, although the drama looks like it's going to continue for a little bit. But the one thing that continues regardless is our economy and its ups and downs. And, you know, the person that's going to bring us up to date on everything is Paul D. Shelton, Jr. of Warwick Shore. Paul, good morning. You there?
Good morning, Gretchen. How are you doing? Yes, I am here.
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Doing my best to decipher everything that's going on in our economy in the last week. You know, this has been election week and something that economists look forward to from a standpoint of understanding how it's going to shape the next 4 years of our life. So, It's been very exciting to see what is going on and how everything is playing out.
Well, I guess let's get started with the one thing that's a constant on this first Friday of the month, and that's the jobs report for the previous month. So talk a little bit about what has happened in the last month with jobs.
So we were kind of blindsided in a good way. We were not expecting to see the numbers that we saw today, but we did see our non-farm payrolls increase by 638,000 in October, and the unemployment rate fell to 6.9%. Now, that was a huge, huge drop in the unemployment rate, dropping from 7.9%, a full 1% down to 6.9%. We did exceed expectations. It was expectations that there would be about 510,000 jobs that would be added to our economy in the month. But, you know, we exceeded that. And I'm going to dive a little bit into the numbers, because even though we exceeded that and the unemployment rate did drop, the market is still showing signs of volatility today. And it's because of kind of the way the numbers are breaking out and how those that are unemployed seems like they may be permanently unemployed. So first off, the labor participation rate, it did rise by 3 basis points. And so it's at 61.7% right now. So that means 61.7% of the people that are of working age and are actively looking for jobs and are actively participating in our economy from an employment standpoint as of right now. From a sector standpoint, the professional and business services rose 208,000, increased by 208,000 jobs, I should say. The retail sector added 104,000 jobs, and most of those in the retail sector were in the electronics and appliances and things that were in that nature, and they were up roughly, you know, 31,000 as well. The construction industry saw a healthy gain, which is something you typically don't see during this time of the year. But the construction industry added 84,000 jobs to the economy, while transportation and warehousing increased by 63,000. And manufacturing was also up by 83,000 jobs as well in the month of October. So across the slate, it seems like there is, you know, pretty much every sector is seeing a significant increase in the number of jobs that were added One of the areas that had a big drop in jobs was in the government sector, and that was primarily based on many of those census workers that were no longer employed to carry out the census reports that we were conducting. So that was something that was kind of expected to take place. The big question is going forward, our economy is still not fully recovered. Even at 6.9% unemployment, that's approximately 10.1 million Americans that are unemployed. And many of those that are employed, and the data shows that many of those that came back and that were accounted for in the month of October were individuals that accepted part-time jobs, individuals that accepted lower wage work than they were accustomed to before. In addition to that, individuals that were unemployed for more than 27 weeks has increased. So we're starting to see that those that are long-term unemployed are starting to transition to be more structurally unemployed and permanently unemployed, which we know that you know, causes so many, you know, effects all across our country and all across society when it comes to economics and when it comes to the social welfare of the children in that household and when it comes to, you know, the effects of other things in our economy, such as, you know, the real estate market. So that really becomes a dark spot on this good numbers that we saw, even though, you know, it was great that we saw the unemployment rate drop and we saw new jobs added to our economy. Unfortunately, those new jobs were, a lot of them were part-time work, and the people that have been unemployed for over 27 weeks continue to see volatility in the job market for them.
So I guess one of the questions I have, because I know you kind of alluded to part of it in terms of, you know, the numbers are still not back where they were pre-COVID. So I guess one of the things that I would ask is, will some of these industries go back to pre-COVID numbers ever? You know, I mean, will they employ the amount of people? I mean, it seems like the job market has just shifted. COVID has forced that, but there's some cases where I don't see any of that going back to pre-COVID style job market, you know, with a lot of people doing work from home. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I didn't mean to cut you off, but that is a very, very good question, and that's one of the things that many economists are looking at in the data right now, and it shows that there has been a shift in the appetite in which we work and an appetite of which we consume. Many people have gotten accustomed to working from home, to being a employee and being a school teacher and for that matter. And there was the CEO of Cushman Wakefield, which is one of the larger, you know, commercial real estate companies. He was on CNBC earlier today, and he was stating that it's going to be a slow recovery getting employees back to those offices and many of those buildings that they manage. They're seeing it all across the country where many employees, many companies are saying, hey, we can downsize our office space because we technically don't need every employee in-house, especially if, you know, they're not essential or client-facing. And the way our economy has shifted now, even those that are client-facing have the ability of Zoom, have the ability of WebEx and things of that nature to be able to maintain that face-to-face capacity with their clients and with their customers. So it's very possible that we will not see many industries and many companies across those industries return to those pre-pandemic levels. And I think that's what really speaks in the long-term unemployed numbers for those that are unemployed more than 27 weeks. They're at a point where we're seeing a structural change in our employment market right now. And that structure is shaping up to be something that is totally, totally different from what we have been accustomed to before. But over the last, you know, I should say 6 months or so, since we've really got accustomed to our economy being this way, we're kind of adapted to where we are in this new norm. And it seems like we're not going to get that full recovery to where we were before. And we're starting to really flatline in that recovery and that job recovery market. So we may be at the point where new job gains and that we're seeing, there's going to be more of the part-time jobs and not more of those full-time jobs. Earlier today, ESPN announced they're going to lay off 300 people. And those are 300 high-wage jobs that are going to be laid off. Those are more than likely going to be substituted. Those 300 individuals, we may have to take lower-wage jobs or suffer through this structural unemployment phase that we're going through and be underemployed for an extended period of time.
Now, with ESPN, for example, do you think some of that has to do with the fact that there are no longer live spectators in the stands? And you know, the way that the games are, I guess, broadcast, you know, and managed has shifted?
I think so. So there's a number of factors that can play into that. One of those things can play into it is the fact that Disney is the parent of ESPN, and Disney announced many of those layoffs. Now, ESPN does have their hospitality sector, or I should say small portion of hospitality within Disney as part of the ESPN radio and the studio and the restaurant that is there, which possibly will see a lot of volatility. There was all the way across the board, and we're still seeing it now with the NFL, with MLB, and with basketball. There was a significant reduction in the number of spectators watching, you know, from the TV standpoint. And one of the things that they feel that drove away a lot of people, a lot of spectators from watching, was the lack of fans and the lack of that game time presence inside of the arenas, inside the ballparks, inside the football stadiums that are taking place right now. Historically, if there was a football game that was not a sellout, it would not be aired on TV. It would be blacked out in the local market. So that's the way
right.
that, you know, most sporting events were broadcast before, for fear that, you know, people will not watch it and will have the notion that it's not as important of a game if no one mm-hmm. actually paid to go to it. So why would I spend my time watching it? With the NBA doing what they did in the bubble, and they did a phenomenal job from a healthcare standpoint of continuing their season, but it potentially
right.
may have hurt, you know, the longevity, or at least in the short term, the revenue generation of the league by allowing us to see no fans there and allowing us to hear all of the conversations, the echoes, the murmurs, and everything that were going on by the players because it was so quiet inside mm-hmm. of the arena. So I think a lot of that a lot of volatility that ESPN is showing right now is based on that. Another thing that took place, too, is something that is local to the Central Florida economy and is dealing with the Golf Channel. So
mm-hmm.
the Golf Channel has, you know, been acquired by ESPN, and they are relocating their operations
oh,
up
wow.
to Connecticut. Yeah. So in that mm-hmm. relocation, you know, up to Connecticut, many of those individuals that worked here and supported the Golf Channel here are faced with that dilemma if they're going to be able to relocate up there or if they should, you know, transition and try to do something different, especially if they have kids that are in high school or in a point where they don't want to up and leave and relocate. And a lot of those jobs, since they are being consolidated in the headquarters for ESPN up in Connecticut, are going to be overlapping positions. So it's
and
really possible
I,
that
to me – to me, that's just weird because I'm sure there's a lot more golf being played down here in Florida than there is in Connecticut. And so why
Correct.
Don't you have maybe a secondary headquarters and keep those people down here in Florida to deal with golf, you know, which
Correct.
Is, you know, a
Correct.
Big industry, especially down here. So.
Correct. Golf is it's a year-round, you know, sport. In Florida, it's something that we
mm-hmm.
can play year-round. Like, you know, the golf courses do not freeze here like they do in the Northeast, and they're not covered in snow for a quarter of the year like many of the other places around the country. So it would logistically, you'd think it would make sense to keep the operation here.
And maybe just the hub to cover not just golf, but other sports that, you know, go on down here that don't necessarily go on up there, like tennis. Anything
Correct.
Involving, you know, the summer type of sports that happen most of the year down here, swimming, volleyball, any you know, any of those type of sports. So it, to me, it just makes sense that they would maintain a secondary hub down here. But, you know, I don't know anything. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We're talking the economy with Paul Z. Shelton of Warwick Shore. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. If you have questions for Paul, the number is 516-387-1944. G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. We'll be right back.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar, or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast, let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
This is Douglas Dobbs of Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community for 29 years with quality funeral and cremation services. Honoring all religions and faiths, we have been here for many grieving families. Whether it's a complete funeral service with a burial or a simple, dignified cremation, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here for you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs. Dedicated to serving our families.
Good afternoon. Good morning, Phil. Sorry. Welcome back to G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. Yeah, I guess I'm rushing toward the weekend, which I shouldn't, because as soon as you rush toward it, it'll be over. So, gotta slow the roll a little bit. We're here with Paul Z. Shelton of Warwick Shore. We're talking the economy today. And so one of the things I was listening to and when I was coming here, and it's not something you and I kind of discussed or prior to, but I was listening to a conversation about if we do change presidents, that there's a possibility that we might end up back in the, I guess, the energy accord with Paris. And, you know, what does that do if that happens in terms of our economy? Do we end up advancing more into renewable type of energies? Or give me your take on that.
Well, one of the things that Biden ran on is the discussion of the renewable energies and using a cleaner energy and a more resourceful power source for our everyday common uses. So that's something that we need to really embrace, and that's something that the rest of the world is starting to embrace. Our fossil fuels and our coal and crude oil, even though there's significant deposits out there, data shows that we are drawing down on that, and it is not the cleanest fuel that we could be using. And speaking to the cleanliness of it, really reigned supreme at the onset of the pandemic. I believe within our world, I should say, being shut down or
mm-hmm.
closed for 3 weeks to a month, the ozone began to heal itself and exhalate
right.
so much cleaner, you know, from that standpoint. So if that's any bit of a test, to where we should be heading, I think we should really take note from that. I do believe that communications overall between our allies will increase, and it's very, very possible that with Biden winning the White House, if that's how it plays out to be, that you know, that Paris climate agreement will be reengaged and that we will move forward with that.
So, and the reason I was asking, so wouldn't that open up some more jobs so that maybe people who are looking to have to switch careers or switch possible jobs, whether it's full-time, part-time, whatever, would that be an industry or would that be an area where some people could look to find more employment in the future?
It definitely can. You know, one of the largest deposits of natural gas, and it's just natural gas alone, is found in the United States. And if you look at some of the plain states, and if you look under, you know, around Pennsylvania, through Ohio in there, and all throughout North America, there are significant deposits of natural gas in North America. And the predictions 10 years ago were that as we transition from using crude oil to using more clean energy, using natural gas and things of that nature, we would see a significant wealth transfer over the next 50 years going forward from traditional oil-producing countries, those OPEC countries, to North America. Based on the reserves of natural gas that was found, or that satellite image shows that are in the United States. So that would open the door for many industries to engage in and for new employment things to come about as a result of that. It will take some time for that to happen. It won't happen overnight. That's something that may take a year or two or maybe in the fourth inning of the next presidential term, whoever, if it is for Biden, but it is something that will take place. One of the things that we have noticed is whenever there is a new surge of energy or oil in the oil in the basins, in the Bakken Shale, and anything of that nature, there are other things that pop up, other stores, restaurants, all sorts of hotels, lodging, things of that nature that open, that provide jobs, you know, additional jobs. And working in the natural gas, the clean energy industry, it's a lucrative industry. It's well-paying jobs in that industry from the bottom to the top. So that would be something that would really help increase the overall wealth capacity of Americans.
Another thing I wanted to ask you about is I think we either had hoped or expected, another stimulus package for the economy by now, and that hasn't happened. And I think some people are kind of holding their breath, waiting, thinking that was going to happen, and it didn't. What impact will that have if we don't see some sort of stimulus by the end of the year? And do you think with a new administration, a different administration, we would still be inclined to receive some sort of stimulus money?
Well, where we are right now in our economy is I think we have recovered, I would say, 95% of the jobs that we are going to recover. There is a large subset of our economy that is starting to draw down on retirement savings, and we can see that in the data. So that leads me to believe that economically the health of households isn't as great as we thought it once was, or it isn't as great today as it was maybe a year or 2 years ago. There is a need for economic stimulus, if not in totality for everyone across the country, for the 10.1 million people right now that are unemployed, and possibly the additional 5 million people that are underemployed as of right now. There is something that is needed for these individuals to help with the health of our economy and help our economy to continue to move forward in this recovery. we can't have a full recovery without having a remedy for the coronavirus. This is a health-related recession that we were in. Technically, we're out of the recession based on GDP numbers that were released for the third quarter. But this is a health-related issue that we're dealing with. And until we have something that's going to satisfy the health-related issue, there is going to be stimulus that's going to be needed. Now, it needs to be done strategically. And whether or not it will be disseminated before December 31st is very unlikely at this point, especially if we do not see Trump regain his seat in the White House. I don't think that there would be any notion for Congress to get together and for the current administration to push for and provide some sort of economic stimulus at this time right now. I think the tenor from Washington at this point is to really fight what's going on with the election and really focused on the election as opposed to focusing on the pandemic and the symptoms that we are suffering from with the pandemic. Going forward into 2021, I believe that the conversation of stimulus will regain some steam. And hopefully in the first quarter, there will be something that will be passed and there will be something that will be delivered to the citizens because, quite frankly, everyone just really needs it. And even if you're an individual that is making the $400,000 a year, or you're above that line where you're considered in the 1%, without the economic stimulus, many people that are renting right now will not be able to pay that rent. Many mortgage holders will not be able to satisfy, you know, those debt obligations that they have. People will not be able to go out and consume and fill up the restaurant, fill up the bars, buy retail goods and things of that nature. So it does impede on everyone at every wealth level and every income level right now. So it is something that is needed for everyone, even if you're not going to receive the check directly. It's needed for the society.
Something else that I saw that was interesting was something issued by the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell that talked about basically we have kind of more of a role to play than we think in terms of our economy or economic recovery by wearing a mask and getting a hold of the pandemic. What are your thoughts about that?
So essentially wearing a mask and getting a hold on the pandemic. I've had a conversation with two individuals this week, and both were from different places. One was from the Bahamas. Another individual was giving me their perspective from Bermuda. This past weekend, Bermuda hosted a golf tournament, the Bermuda tournament, which was very successful. And the reason they were able to host that tournament and have spectators outside at the tournament was because of the way that they handled the pandemic, with shutting down the economy and everyone being disciplined with wearing their mask and slowing down the spread of viruses. Now, I'm not completely sure about this, but I believe that Bermuda has only realized, I believe, 9 fatalities as a result of the coronavirus. And their numbers have been extremely low. The government was shut down for a while, and when they shut down, they provided economic assistance to all citizens to help them bridge the gap while the economy was completely closed. They did not reopen the economy to visitors until July. So July was the first time you were able to, if you were not a native and if you weren't there or a resident, that was the first time you were able to travel to Bermuda. And since then, they've been one of the countries that has had the lowest amount of coronavirus cases because of their initial steps that they took in slowing down the spread of the virus. And one of the major contributors to that was wearing face masks, face shields, and face coverings. and things of that nature. I think they're, you know, doing that is a good thing to help, you know, slow the spread of the virus. There's some more bitter medicine that we probably could take in our society with shutting mm-hmm. down, which would be hard, you know, on the economy of our size, but it may be needed. We flirted with it. We really didn't do a hard shutdown the first time around in March. We did close things, but it was not a hard shutdown. You were still able to go out and go to the stores that's needed and do things that were desired. But in contrast, if you look at the Bahamas, with a person that I spoke with, representative that I spoke with earlier this week, he told me he spoke with one of his relatives in the Bahamas, and the way that they've locked down the country is if you need to leave your house to go to a grocery store, to go to anywhere else or do commerce, you have to notify the local organization, the police, and give them your address so that when you're out driving, if you get pulled over, they'll let you continue to go. And they're only allowing certain households and certain amount of individuals to be out at a time. They're really locking it down to make sure they contain the spread of the virus. Those are drastic steps, but sometimes that's the medicine that's needed to really deal with something of this magnitude.
Right. Because to me, even the amount that we did shut down, I just don't think it was long enough in terms of you know, people going back to bars and going back to these large social gatherings and stuff like that. And you know, I'm just personally just don't think that we had a great example set in terms of how we should have handled this. But I'm sure we'll see a lot of stuff in retrospect as the information is analyzed when we finally get past this. But anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We are here with Paul V. Shelton of Warwickshire. We are talking the economy. And when we come back, I want to ask about the travel industry, you know, and our industry here in terms of tourism, which we attempted a slight reopening then, and it seems like that didn't work either. But we're going to talk more about that when we come back. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Hi, I'm Tim Garris. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been 2 decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the Arklatex. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, on KHAM Radio.
Are you chilling?
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are here with Paul V. Shelton, Jr. of Warwickshire. We are talking the economy. And, you know, so I've got to get down to what affects us here, where we are here in Central Florida. And I'm sure it's affecting other people, too. But here we really kind of suffer when, you know, the travel industry and the tourism industry isn't up to par. We've seen some more incidences where people have had to be laid off or let go because it didn't bounce back the way that, you know, a lot of people had hoped in terms of people going to the theme parks. Then also, too, we're not having as many flights in and out as we've had before. So can you talk a little bit about that, and I'm sure other places are not having the amount of travel that they used to have either. Those, and then therefore there are some more people without jobs. And then when the travel industry goes, those residual types of industries go as well. So can you talk a little bit about how we get back, or do we ever get back to where we were with that?
Yeah, it's pretty rough, especially in Florida, and especially for Central Florida. I know Florida as a state, we have lagged behind the national levels when it comes to our unemployment rate, and continue to do so, you know, which is very, very unfortunate, because we're so heavily dependent on those industries that you just mentioned before. So travel, leisure, hospitality, that's our bread and butter, especially in Central Florida. They did remove the ban, or at least we're able to have cruises now, or at least the cruise ships can start doing some explorative voyages to see how they would be able to really set sail and socially distant themselves. But that's not going to derive any revenue, you know, anytime soon, at least not for the next one or two quarters. And one, they have to have confidence, you know, citizens have to have confidence that if I get on a cruise ship, things will be safe. Remember, the last things that we saw around the cruise ships was not a pretty picture. I don't think no one wants to run the risk of being stuck at sea for 21 days or however long it is. You're running low on food, and you're running full on, I should say, toilets there. So that's not a pretty picture, and that's not something that, you know, many of us wants to experience. We have seen somewhat of an uptick in air travel. The airline industry seems like they're able to, you know, provide some surety and safety in not becoming hot spots in the air. And that was the initial fear, is that when you get on an airplane, you're potentially creating these, you know, flying hot spots where everyone on there is going to be contaminated with the virus, get off that plane, and spread it through the community. We have not seen that come to fruition, which is a great thing. So hopefully we will see travel, you know, start to return, you know, sooner than later. That will help us in our local economy, help our theme parks, help people that are, you know, coming here to be able to go shop and conduct commerce in a local economy. But we just have not seen that in a full magnitude as of yet.
But now let me ask a question about that, because aren't there more people now that have decided, since they're doing everything via, well, not everything, but a lot of stuff via Zoom and other conference type apps, that why should I travel? You know, I'm doing the job and I'm doing it okay. So hasn't that had any kind of impact on that business travel?
So business travel has been completely swamped and has tanked, and that has had a significant impact on business travel. And I think that that impact will be long-term. From a corporate standpoint, I would rather pay for a Zoom, you know, subscription than pay for hotel, lodging, travel, and everything for all of my executives to travel across the world, when they can conduct business from home, and at the same time it provides a better work-life balance, because they can conduct business, and as soon as they're done with an important conference call, they can be at their child's baseball game that evening instead of being traveling back.
People, I don't have to spend money on the bottom half of my clothes. out there, you know, that are saying, hey, you know, I don't have to get dressed up, you know, and stuff like that. So
exactly. And if you're like me that typically wears one or two color shirts, a white shirt or a blue shirt, you know, every day in a tie, I can, you know, recycle those shirts often and quicker. You know, I can keep them cleaner longer, because if I'm not in front of the camera, you know, they don't necessarily have to be on. So I'm not running the risk of going to lunch or going to Chipotle or Burger King or somewhere and then having to take the shirt to the dry cleaners, you know. So there's a lot of things that has changed as a result of that, and that has impacted, you know, the travel and leisure industry. And business travel is something that is very important to us. We have one of the largest convention centers in this country and in the world, and a lot of business is conducted at the Orange County Convention Center. And in addition to that, there's personal commerce that's conducted there as well in Orlando. So you have visitors, business travelers that come here. They'll bring their families because they're going to be here for a business, and then they'll spend a day at SeaWorld. They'll spend a day at Disney. We're not getting that ancillary travel anymore, and it's really starting to show in the numbers. I think for the third quarter, SeaWorld recorded a loss, I believe, yesterday on their quarter earnings call of roughly $80 million or $800 million that they're going to see over the next year that they're reporting. So that is significant. They're transitioning a lot of their staff that's going to be furloughed to part-time workers and trying to downsize in that capacity to help save on costs from the insurance standpoint. So there's a lot of things that are being driven and being hurt by this lack of travel.
So one of the things also that I noticed, and it's kind of fluctuated, it's gone up and down, and seems to be going back down again, is gas, you know, because people aren't, I guess, using it as much. Or is that the case? Is that the only reason? What are we seeing in terms of the use of gas?
So people are not traveling as much. We're not, you know, the trips that majority of us are taking is to the grocery stores and back. We don't have, for the majority, I should say, we don't have those long commutes where we're sitting in the car for an hour one way each way, going back and forth, burning gas. We don't have the full fleet of school buses that are on the streets right now that are using gas. So there's been a significant reduction in the use of petroleum from a whole standpoint, and that's what's kind of helping compress the numbers that we're seeing at the tank, which is overall good for the economy because it's allowing us to have a cheaper input cost, I should say, to run our households. But we are seeing a much reduced amount of gas consumption. Now, we are in the time of the year where for many states it's getting colder outside. And we're entering that season where gas consumption typically increases as we tend to heat our homes and things of that nature. So we may see a drawdown on gas reserves in that capacity. But with the Zoom environment that we are in, I should say, with the webinar environment that we are in, the reliance on gas is just not there. The demand for it is just not there like it was pre-pandemic levels. And it may be very, very low.
Well, I'm sorry, because one of the things I was curious about with that is, you know, because it seemed like the prices were kind of inconsistent. They went up, they went down, or whatever. And, yeah, we're not doing as much in terms of going to the office or whatever. But with the, I guess, lack of participation in mass transit, so to speak, when we're talking about, you know, people not flying that much or whatever, but are we not seeing maybe an increase in people taking their cars, going back and forth, the increase in road trips versus people being on planes, trains, and buses going to
places, not.
Especially with the holidays coming up.
Correct. Thus far, we have not seen it. Now, it waits to see what will happen coming up for the holidays, for Thanksgiving. But honestly, we have not seen a substitution in that. People have stayed home. For the most part, people are not traveling more than 200 miles away from their house for vacations right now. They're staying local. They're not traveling across country. They're not driving up to Virginia or to different states to visit grandma and different things of that nature. People are, you know, staying closer to home as of right now. And where we are with the spike in coronavirus cases as of right now, we may see even more muted travel when it comes to the Thanksgiving holiday. We're expecting to see somewhat of an increase for intrastate travel, with people traveling across the state from Tallahassee to Miami and up to Jacksonville and vice versa. But that may be put on hold, you know, as cases continue to spike as of right now.
So we are going to take our final break. We are here with Paul V. Shelton of Warwickshire. We're talking about the economy, and if you have any questions for Paul, the number is 516-387-1944. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Swiffer Sweeper cleans so completely, you'll never go back to your old broom again.
Now it's on for Mary from a Mr. Broom.
Sweeper is redesigned to clean corners, and it traps and locks 50% more dirt, dust, and hair than a broom. So go all the way clean. New Swiffer. Clean better or your money back. Guaranteed.
This is Douglas Dobbs, owner and funeral director at Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community with two generations of family funeral service. With the recent addition of my son Brandon, we are here to take care of the needs of Central and West Orlando. From simple cremation to a full burial, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here to help you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs, dedicated to serving our families.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thank you for being with us on this beautiful Friday. We are here with Paul V. Shelton of Warwickshire talking about the economy. And I had a question about something I saw about state takeovers of businesses and how it's similar to there may be some of that is occurring in how it's similar to what certain Asian countries do. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I could speak to that. I didn't know or see exactly the article maybe that you were referring to, but typically when a state takes over a business or when any government municipality takes over a business, it's because that business may be vital or essential to that community, and there is a need, ongoing need from the community standpoint for that business to continue as a going concern. And the business has reached a level at which it can no longer operate itself as a going concern. So the state or the municipality would need to come in and step in to do this. Now, this is typically in the ranks of socialism, and that's something that we don't, you know, particularly like in the United States. And that's something that we don't lobby for, or we did not lobby for, and that's one of the reasons why there was a lot of talk against Bernie Sanders in each of his presidential bids, because they felt that that was the direction that Bernie Sanders was taking things. So typically, you know, that's what takes place when you come to a state that's taken over a business, and why a state has taken over a business in that respect. I don't know if there was any specific companies or examples or industries that was mentioned in that you were referring to.
Well, I was just curious in terms of when and why that would happen, and is that something that we would see become more prevalent in our country, in our type of economy? And, you know, I guess I wanted to find out what would be the benefit of that. So you kind of cleared that up for me. But, one of the things that, not necessarily state, one of the things that has concerned me in recent years especially is that we seem to be developing more and more monopolies. And from what I remember in school, that monopolies weren't necessarily, outside of the board game, wasn't necessarily a great thing, because it kind of reduced the competition. And when you reduce competition, that kind of doesn't help the consumer, because it tends to reduce the opportunity for I guess paying less for goods and services. So we're seeing it a lot with, I guess, our social media, and then we're seeing it a lot with other cases too, in terms of I'm looking at the few places that we can go to now for, let's say, groceries, or the few big companies when we look at, for example, petroleum and stuff like that. So can you talk about why, and I could be wrong, and I was also looking at cell phone services too. So can you talk about why we are seeing more of these, I guess, conglomerates, more of these businesses being consumed by bigger businesses, and is that going to hurt us in the long run?
That's a very, very good question. And I think that one of the reasons we're seeing a lot of this competition that is taking place in a lot of these mergers and acquisitions is directly related to the behavior and the success of the stock market over the last 5 to 6 years, I would say. Typically, where we enter into a end of an economic regime and we're starting a new one, we start a new economic regime going into 2010, that's usually when you see a lot of companies put themselves up for sale. A lot of CEOs look at it as the perfect opportunity. Stock market's at all-time highs. A lot of stocks are high. And this is a great time to sell my company and take advantage of riding off into the sunset as a success as a business person and with a large paycheck. So a lot of the M&A activity that has taken place over, you know, the recent years, I should say over the last decade or so, has been as a result of that. You are perfectly correct in what you mentioned before. Having monopolies, you know, a monopoly is something that is not desired, even in the standpoint of oligopolies, and having, you know, two or three very large organizations that kind of have the lion's share of the marketplace. That's something that we really don't want, because it destructs the fabric of competition. You know, competition is something that is needed, that allows prices to be normalized, to allow prices to be regulated, and to be fair across the board. So that competition is needed in that respect. When you get to a point where the monopolistic competition begins to diminish and disintegrate, you get to a point where you have a lesser amount of differentiated products. So things begin to look very similar, because you're only getting something from one channel, something from one area. You don't have that freedom of choice to change between various products, or to switch back and forth between various producers and products and things of that nature. When you get to that level, typically prices will increase, and then the overall cost of goods will increase, and the net will be a negative and a bad for society as a whole.
And this is where I guess I have an issue, where people talk about there should be more deregulation. And I'm saying, I'm like, well, if you do more of that, then you've got companies and entities that can just operate willy-nilly without any restraint. Me personally, I like going to my cable company or whatever and saying, do you have something better? If not, I'm going to go elsewhere. But if there's not anywhere else to go, you know, I'm just stuck. And it's like, okay, yeah, you can either deal with us or you can just deal without, you know. And I personally don't like to be put in that position. So
I'm the same way as a consumer, and I feel that way with utility. So, you know, you're boxed in, your choice with utility companies is geographic, and you don't have the option to choose between a Florida Power and Light versus a Duke Energy versus a Orlando Utility Commission. You don't have that option to go back and forth, which will help keep prices low. So that would be an example in our, you know, in our short ecosystem in Central Florida, of an oligopoly, where you have three entities that are controlling everything, and they have an agreed upon territory, and they're not going to encroach on anyone's territory.
But since they have that territory, they can charge whatever they want to charge.
Mm-hmm. But this is where the regulations come in, because they are regulated to a degree, correct? Where they
correct.
They can't go too far out of filter, correct?
That is correct. They are regulated to a degree, but there is that degree has limits on it, so they can't increase rates over an annual basis by X amount greater than what their energy costs would be. There's different factors that can go into how they derive their energy costs. It can be through derivatives in the financial instruments in the market, or, you know, that year could potentially change. If they say, you know, our fiscal year now needs to end in the third quarter, and I don't know what their fiscal years are, so this is just an example. But if they say our fiscal year needs to end now 10/1, so that our full year really encumbers the time where more houses are using more energy, maybe during the summer, and more cars are on the road and more things are on the grid, causing all the prices to go up. This kind of goes in tandem with the thoughts, and I know many people across Central Florida are getting the knocks on their door from solar panel companies. So many companies, I've had at least five people visit me to sell me on solar panels, and I won't go through my whole spiel on it, but essentially the energy that I would create goes back to the grid to be harvested out for whatever use in the future. The problem that I have with that is I don't get any say-so in how the grid uses the energy that I generated. This is something that happened very similar with Enron and the windmills that they had in California. Remember, I believe back in the early 2000s, we were having blackouts all across California, you know, blackouts here, blackouts there. And energy
right.
was going out, and Enron was saying, oh, there's too much power on the grid, we couldn't control it. But what they were really doing is they were shutting off the windmills, and they were shutting down the grid so that everything would go down, and then when they turn it back on, everyone is using energy and driving up the cost of it, and then they're charging more people for it. I fear that that could be something, not saying that that's the whole premise behind the solar panels, but when I don't get to control how my energy is going to be given back to me when I'm
right.
producing it and giving it to you, then I have a problem with that. Then I feel like there should be more regulation in there to at least allow me to say, hey, if I want to go solo, I'm within my neighborhood, I'm within city limits, I'm within the county limits, but if I produce energy, I want that energy to be stored, you know, in a container on my property, or so that I can just live off my own separate grid. We're not going
right.
to do that. Yeah, so that's some of the caveats with that.
Okay. That's an interesting conversation. Oh, my. Okay. Because I'm pro solar and windmills and all that type of stuff, but, you know,
yeah.
I kind of want to have more of a say over what happens with that. So.
Correct.
All
yeah.
right.
And I'm for it as well.
All right. Well, how do we reach you, and what should we be looking out for in the coming months?
Well, you can reach me at 407-493-6288. You can follow us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram under Warwick Shore Advisors. Visit our website at warwickshore.com. And something that we should be looking out for, and I want to mention really quick, the Earning and Learning Coalition of Orange County has an Everyday Moms campaign, which they're raising money to give back to those moms that were laid off that don't have the equal resources for their primary care needs children. Those are the children that are in daycare centers right now. And we all know, we spoke about it before, daycares are struggling. So I do have a GoFundMe page, and I would like to get that over to you. And we're trying to raise at least $10,000 to be gifted out to mothers all across Orange County.
Okay. And what is that called again? So we can make sure everybody remembers.
It's the Everyday Mom campaign, and it's going to be featured on Channel 9 WFTV News, and it's driven by the Early Learning Coalition of Orange County.
Okay.
All right. So send me the information so we can post on Jeez Power Hour Facebook page and wherever else. So, and I'm sorry because I meant to give you more time for that. I totally forgot.
Oh, no
problem. But thank you for mentioning
all.
That. Yeah. So.
Yes.
Have
you.
A blessed weekend, Paul. And talk to you soon. And yeah, just keep me abreast of that. Thanks.
We'll do. God bless.
God bless. And thank you all for listening. This has been G's Power Hour. I never had so good entertainment. Be well, be safe, be blessed, and please remember, all real power comes from God. Have a wonderful weekend. Take care.